It's Monday, July 21st, and you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. We've got a great show to match the weather today. We will be talking with Kim Kiefer about CBJ activities and the assembly meeting tonight. We'll learn about a booster for the Falcons, the Thunder Mountain High School football team. We'll learn about a driver's training class, what's going on at Perseverance Youth Theater Program, and also about household hazardous waste. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Disney's Planes, Fire and Rescue was among box office openers over the weekend. The film about a crew of firefighters includes a Native American character. Voiced by Cherokee actor Wes Studi, Windlifter is a heavy-lift helicopter. His green frame includes a pyramid-like design, and his propellers resemble feathers. Screenwriter Jeffrey Howard says after research and consultation about Native American firefighters, they wanted to pay tribute with a character who was brave, strong, and funny. Howard says everything from the character's personality to design is inclusive of all tribes. He says they did not want to make Windlifter mystic or supernatural. He can sense wind, smell smoke, and know when the fire's coming and what direction it's going. Native American journalists and students recently attended a screening with Studi and Disney officials in California. Students Deanne Tapahi and Dylan Graham were among the crowd.
I thought it was really good for the Native culture to be presented in a film like that.
I was actually really excited because it's one of the first movies that Disney has come out where they kind of dedicated it to a specific job, so like the firefighters, and how like right now there's a couple of fires in I think Arizona that a lot of Native Americans are working there and they're fighting the fires, so I think it was really good timing.
Shirley Snavey, executive director of Vision Maker Media, says at first she thought Windlifter was stereotypical, but after the panel discussion with Disney, she came to appreciate the character.
It was based on fact and legend, and I also think that the role that Windlifter played in the movie as a member of the team and basically somewhat of the spiritual leader of the group, I felt was an important message for youth and for non-Indian and Indian relations as well.
Canadian television reporter and journalism teacher Duncan McHugh says he wasn't a fan of the film.
It was highly problematic to me. It was yet another depiction by Disney of Aboriginal people as being somewhat mystical and drawing on some sort of noble romantic stereotype.
For example, McHugh points to the writers making Windlifter pan-Indian and the way the character speaks with a stereotypical Indian accent. He says, as a kid's movie, this is the time when children are learning about representations of all people.
And so these cartoons, these animations are really, really important to how Americans and the rest of the world are going to view Native Americans.
McHugh notes there are small advances in the film with the use of a Native actor and a Native consultant. He says there still needs to be change in Hollywood to incorporate more Native perspectives and contemporary Native people. The lacrosse team representing the six Iroquois nations took bronze in the World Cup of Lacrosse over the weekend in Denver. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
Emerging lacrosse superstars Miles and Lyle Thompson led the Iroquois Nationals to a 16-5 victory over Australia in the third-place game on Saturday. It's the first time a team other than the U.S., Canada, or Australia has medaled in the history of the World Lacrosse Championships since it began in 1967. Canada took the gold this year. The Thompson brothers are both Akwesasne Mohawks living in Albany, New York, and they're coming off an unprecedented year when they both broke the Division I lacrosse record for most points in a season and shared the Dewa Aladun Award for Best Player in the United States. The Iroquois Nationals made headlines off the field 4 years ago when they couldn't go to the World Championships in England because the country wouldn't recognize their Iroquois sovereign passports. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
Humboldt State University has a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program emphasizing decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted from August 1 to begin in January. More at humboldt.edu/social work.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. We're live from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. The weather? What I'm reading says partly cloudy, but it's pretty glorious out there. It's around 73 degrees in downtown Juneau. Tonight, they're expecting some showers, and then tomorrow, mostly cloudy, and tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. So thank you for sharing your sunny day with us. Our first guest is Kim Kiefer. She is the city manager for the city and borough of Juneau, Alaska. Hi, Kim. How are you?
I am great. How can you not be on a day like today?
We're very appreciative of great weather.
We are.
Okay. So there's an assembly meeting tonight.
Correct.
And it is at what time and where again?
7 o'clock, Assembly Chambers. So the building downtown that has the mural on the side across Marine Park starts at 7 o'clock.
And actually, I was walking through Marine Park. If the bear is still there, it's not a live bear. It's a bear that I think is attached to a Holland America cruise ship. It might be across from the bear. There was a person in a bear suit greeting people as they were getting off the dock. And then you walk a little further and there was an eagle. Actually, a person in an eagle costume again, too. So it was, there was a lot of wildlife on the dock today.
Yes, definitely.
All right, but back to reality.
Okay.
So there are a couple of things. There's always things on the assembly, agenda for the meeting tonight. But tonight, there's a discussion about taking up an ordinance that would create a single empowered board for the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, which is downtown, and the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. And if the assembly agrees tonight, it would then go to voters to amend the CBJ charter, which would be part of the October municipal election. So how do things run now?
Okay, right now the pools are run through Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
So the funding comes through the Parks and Rec budget. For aquatics, and there's a single aquatic manager that oversees both facilities, and then it's an aquatic director, I think, is the position title, and then there's two managers that oversee each of the individual facilities. And what is being proposed is to have those two facilities run similar to what they do with Eagle Crest. So it would be an empowered board, which means that they would hire the manager. So they would hire the person that would oversee both facilities, and then that person would hire their staff. So if we think about Eagle Crest board hires their manager, which right now is Matt Lillard, and then Matt hires his staff, and he's responsible for his staff. Eagle Crest does get a subsidy, general fund subsidy, as would the aquatic facility board would get a subsidy.
Okay, let's roll this back.
Okay.
So who would be on the board?
Well, so what happens tonight is the assembly decides whether or not they want to put it on the ballot. And for a charter change, which this would be, it requires 6 votes of the assembly, which is unusual. Most things require 5 votes. So it requires 6 votes to move it forward onto the ballot. And the ballot language would say that the assembly may create an aquatic advisory board. And so that's really important to know. It's May. So the voters in October may decide that they want to do this and they would say yes to it, but it's still up to the assembly to decide whether they want to create that board, what that board would look like, how many members would be on that board, and then the responsibilities that that board would have.
Okay. So what's the benefits? Obviously, if you're looking at this, there must be some pros to to making an amendment to the charter.
Right. And what the assembly, I believe, what they have seen with Eagle Crest is that they are well run. It's a single focus. It's not watered down, which is not necessarily a good thing to use with aquatics, but Parks and Rec has a lot of different things they have to do. But if you have an aquatic board, they're just focusing just on aquatics. That's the only thing they're looking at is aquatics.
So they'll get subsidy, and it's up to them or the mat. Well,
so then that board would report to the assembly. They wouldn't report to me.
Okay.
They would still be CBJ staff,
right?
But the hiring of that director, the aquatic director, would be the board's responsibility, and the assembly would appoint the board. So if there were concerns about how the operations were happening, it would go to the board, and then it would go to the assembly. I would be out of that.
And once again, who would be on the board? What kind of people? Would it be CBJ employees?
No, it would be members of the community that have an interest in aquatics and in business, looking at how can you, the long-term goal of this, I think from the assembly standpoint, is to decrease the general fund subsidy to aquatics. So how do you decrease the expenditures and how do you increase the revenues so that there's less draw?
But the assembly would appoint the board members.
The assembly would appoint the board members, and the board members would have to apply to be put on this new board.
Right. And so what's the difference between an empowered board and an enterprise board?
An enterprise board is like Docks and Harbors and Airport, where they make the revenues to spend, whereas Eagle Crest is an empowered board because they still get some general fund money. So the airport, Bartlett Regional Hospital, all the fees that they raise through their services, they use for operations. They don't get any additional funding from the CBJ General Fund.
Okay. So the proposed Aquatics Board would hire the person who would set the policy for the pool operations, or would the board
Correct.
Do that? Okay.
Probably together. The board would probably have some direction they would like to go. And as they are hiring that person, would say, here's what our goal is.
You know,
and whether that goal is to decrease the general fund subsidy, to increase users and numbers of attending different events, it would be up to the board to make that decision.
Okay. And so you're using the Eagle Crest model for this aquatic, this possible aquatic board?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how much money does the city think it will save with such a board?
Well, that's what's unknown at this point. It really depends on how the aquatic, if it passes in October and if the assembly decides to appoint an aquatic board, then what the aquatic board, how they want to design the staffing for the facilities, design the staffing and design the fees, how that all happens. A big piece that I heard many times during the Finance Committee meetings is that Eagle Crest was really good about marketing, and that the marketing hasn't been as good for the aquatic facilities. And, you know, you want to get people in there. That's in all of our facilities. We want people to be able to come and use those facilities.
We want them used to their capacity if possible.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, we've been talking about Eagle Crest a lot, so we're going to move away from aquatics. If you're interested in this conversation, go to the assembly meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. And if you can't get down there, listen to it and send your comments to your assembly members, your representatives.
And you can send those comments now because the assembly will take action tonight. They have to, by August 8th, take action on anything that will be on the ballot in October. So there's a very short window, and this is the last assembly meeting before that August 8th deadline.
So to get it on the ballot,
people need to give their comments before 4:30 so the assembly members get them tonight.
Today. Okay. All right. So if you're so moved, by all means, do it. Because go to the meeting tonight or send those emails by 4:30. Mm-hmm. And another topic that I think is in that same timeline is the assembly tonight is also going to vote on the proposal to put Treadwell Arena under the Eagle Crest Board. So the Treadwell Arena is the ice skating rink
Correct.
In Douglas. Mm-hmm. And that board already oversees ski area operations, and we all just talked about that, and also the nonprofit Wells Fargo Diamond Fieldhouse in the Valley. If the assembly agrees, this also goes to vote in October. So what exactly would the Eagle Crest Board be taking on by adding Treadwell under their umbrella?
So it would be a whole different focus of what they're currently doing. Their focus is on skiing. The field house really is a contract for managing a facility, which is a little bit different than what they're doing for Eagle Crest itself.
What's the difference?
So they're basically a contractor. They're contracted to manage the facility, so they provide the staff there. They work on the scheduling, and they get paid to do that work.
The board does that.
The board hires somebody to
okay.
do that.
So once again, there's a manager that
correct.
Okay.
That does.
So
that
person is picked and picked by that board, and then reports to the Eagle Crest board. But it's
picked by the Eagle Crest manager.
Oh, okay.
And as a contract. So
I see.
The operations happen through the manager.
Okay, so there is the board, and
yep.
then there is the
Eagle Crest manager.
And the Treadwell manager reports to the Eagle Crest manager.
Well, that's yet to be decided. So the Wells Fargo one, mm-hmm. the field house, that person reports right now to Eagle Crest manager. If Treadwell was added to that, and I think part of the reason they looked at adding Treadwell to Eagle Crest is because it's winter sports. So you've got Treadwell Ice Arena, you've got skiing. So you've got that winter recreation. And is there benefit in marketing and other kinds of things to because you're looking at winter sports? Could there potentially be shared staff that could be used between the facilities? This recommendation came pretty late in the process, and so the Eagle Crest Board didn't really have a lot of time to talk about it. They've met a couple times, and at this point they still have a lot of questions, and so they have written a letter to the Assembly saying, we still have these questions on how it would happen. How much money do we get for Treadwell to be able to manage it? What are the expectations by the Assembly on what is done? What does the Eagle Crest Board look like? Right now you've got the Eagle Crest Board that is very focused on skiing. You don't have anybody that, to my knowledge, on the Eagle Crest Board that's focused on ice skating or hockey. And so do you expand that board to add a couple more members that would have that focus and represent that group?
Right.
And so there's still a lot more questions about that because it came up, like I said, very late in the finance process. Once again, this is being done to look at, can you share funding that will decrease what the general fund subsidy is? So share marketing, share staff, be able to move things around a little bit so it actually would cost less money to operate it or bring in more revenues.
So that all these questions are still being explored with the Treadwell and possibly going under the Eagle Crest banner. And is that going to be explored tonight? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I think at this point, I think the Assembly is going to decide whether or not they want to put it on the ballot or if it's premature to put it on the ballot in October.
So there might not be enough information.
There may not be enough information. And so what the Assembly could do is they could decide they want to table it. And then bring it up at a future date if they want to do that. But once again, that ordinance is under the same timeline that it has to be adopted. If it's going to move forward, it's got to be adopted by 6 members of the Assembly, and it needs to be adopted by August 8th in order to be on the October election.
Okay,
ballot.
So once again, if you have a comment about either the Treadwell Arena going under the Eagle Crest Board umbrella or the Aquatic Center's having a board overviewing them. 4:30 is the deadline, and you could just search for Juno Assembly and find all the emails.
Juno.org and go straight to Assembly. And once again, it's really important that the voters are really clear that this is a two-step process, that the voters could decide, yes, they want to go that direction, but it's written in such a way for the Aquatic Board that the Assembly may then appoint an Aquatic Board. They don't have to. So it depending upon what happens in October, the Assembly has the prerogative to do it if it passes, or they can decide, no, they want to wait and look at it maybe in the future at some point.
Okay, so it's really about amending the charter that they may, but it's not a done deal.
Correct.
So, but tonight they're going to discuss about whether or not it's going to go on the ballot.
On the ballot, correct.
Okay, so one more question, and then I'm going to let you go. We have a full show today. So if somebody's listening and they say, oh, well, I would want to be on an aquatic board, and Eagle Crest board, I would want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What how do people put their hat in the ring for these boards?
Great question. Thank you. We always have plenty of opportunity for people to get involved in government. So if you go to juno.org, go to the clerk's website, they've got a listing of all the boards and commissions and all the vacancies. And you can look on there and find out where your area of interest is. So you don't have to be an expert in something. It can be something that you have a passion for and you've got the commitment and the time to be able to put into it. So it's, as I said to somebody recently, you don't have to have a master's degree in something to be on a board. What we want is somebody that's got an interest and willingness to show up to the meetings, to learn about it, and then to be able to make decisions. So juno.org, clerk's page, you can find all the different ones. I think we've got something like 45 different boards and commissions that people can apply for.
Oh, my. All right. Well, if you're feeling civic-minded on a beautiful Monday afternoon, go and check that out. And 7 o'clock tonight in the Assembly Chambers, if you've got something to say, say it to the people who are making the decision.
Yes.
Kim, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you. Enjoy the day.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of July, 2014. The first train robbery in this country took place on this day, 1873. The James Gang held up the Rock Island Express in Adair, Iowa. It's the anniversary of the first Wild West showdown. It happened in Springfield, Missouri, 1865. Wild Bill Hickok got into an argument with a cowboy named Davis Tutt. Argument had to do with a woman and a gambling debt. They decided to have a duel. They faced off in the street, a distance of about 75 paces. They fired simultaneously. Tutt's shot went wild, and Hickok's hit Tutt through the heart. And a few years later, a writer named George Ward Nichols wrote about it in Harper's New Monthly magazine that made Wild Bill a household name throughout the country. It's the birthday of Hart Crane, born Garrettsville, Ohio, 1899. His father, successful candy businessman. By the time Hart Crane was a teenager, he knew that he was gay. He moved to New York, hung out with poets. His drinking got the best of him. And in 1932, at the age of 33, he killed himself jumping overboard a steamship on his way from Mexico to New York, leaving behind his masterpiece, the poem, The Bridge. It's the birthday of novelist and teacher John Gardner, Batavia, New York, 1933, best known for his novel Grendel, the retelling of Beowulf from the viewpoint of the monster. Also for his book, The Art of Fiction, a standard text for many novelists. And it's the birthday of Ernest Hemingway, Oak Park, Illinois, 1899. In July 1925, he visited Pamplona in Spain for the celebration, the bullfighting, the running of the bulls, and so forth. He and his wife arrived a few days early, and on this day, 1925, on his 26th birthday, Hemingway began his first novel. He said, "Everybody my age had written a novel, and I was still having a difficult time writing a paragraph." So he sat down in hotels and bars in Madrid and an apartment in Paris, and 2 months after he'd begun writing in Pamplona, he finished the first draft. He called it Fiesta at first, and then The Lost Generation, and finally The Sun Also Rises. Sent the manuscript to Scribner's. It was picked up by the editor, Maxwell Perkins, who liked it a lot. The book was published in 1926. Got some good reviews, but Hemingway's own mother did not like it. She said, "It is a doubtful honor to produce one of the filthiest books of the year. Every page fills me with a sick loathing. If I should pick up a book by any other writer with such words in it, I should read no more, but pitch it in the fire." It was his second novel, A Farewell to Arms, that came out in 1929, that became a bestseller and enabled Hemingway to make a living writing fiction. Here's a poem for today by James Laughlin. some people think that poetry should be adorned or complicated. I'm not so sure. I think I'll take the simple statement in plain speech, compressed to brevity. I think that will do all I want to do. A poem by James Laughlin, Some People Think, from the Collected Poems of James Laughlin, 1925 to 1997, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joe Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. You're listening on KTOO News. Juno, it is 3:25 p.m. Our next guest is Jenny Smith. She is here to talk about the Peregrine Booster Club, which is affiliated with the Falcons, the Thunder Mountain High School football team. And there is a Whale Watch Cruise, a fundraiser, coming up this Friday night. It starts at 5. It's from Ellen Marine Dock at Stater Harbor, and it's $75 per person. Children 6 and under are $50. What a steal. I was out this weekend for an incredible bubble feeding show. It was just
excellent.
It was just crazy. It was just nonstop. It was National Geographic stuff here in our very own backyard. So, Jenny, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
So, the Falcons, they are getting ready for their season. It starts pretty soon, huh?
Yes, it's coming up in August. Our first game is at Nikiski on the 16th, and then the next weekend we'll have a home game with Sitka here. And we aren't sure if it'll be a Friday or Saturday night yet, and we're waiting for them to finalize their arrangements, but we are raring to go.
That sounds great. So if you want to buy a season's ticket, how do you buy a season's ticket, and how much are they?
They're $30. We have 5 home games this season, and you see any Thunder Mountain High School football player, cheerleader, booster club member, myself. My number is 988-7643. If you need to find a season pass, give me a holler.
Okay, that sounds great. And so that's for 5 games. And it looks like there's also a website, Thunder Mountain Falcon Football. So if you just search Thunder Mountain Falcon Football, you would find this. And that has all different types of fundraising stuff on it as far as the whale watching. And
yeah, it has information on what's happening now, our events going on. We haven't posted our schedule yet. We need to get that up soon. As soon as we can finalize it, we'll get it on there.
Well, the guys just got back from football camp, right?
They did, and they had an amazing turnout. 32 kids and 6 coaches went.
Where was this?
Down in Astoria, Oregon, and it was great. They really came together as a team, and they're all really psyched to play ball now.
That's great. And so, once again, the whale watching is this Friday. So if you want to get out on the water in an affordable way for Juno, because, of course, if you just called one of the tour operators here, it's a lot more. So they really do a great job to support our local teams. And the fundraising is really, like, really, really essential for travel, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. We have to raise about $100,000 a year.
Holy moly.
To equip and send our kids to the different games, because when the Southeast Alaska teams join the sport, basically join football in the state, the requirement was that they had to fund teams to come down to play them. So we don't only fund ourselves traveling, we fund the visiting team coming to play us when they come from Fairbanks. We know we play North Pole. Now they're in their league. Maybe they fund more of their own selves, but Nikiski, Soldotna, Kenai, Kodiak, those kinds of teams, we foot the bill. So it does take a tremendous amount of money because the teams are large as well.
Right.
We're about halfway there. We're working hard. We've had a few concession fundraisers going on, taco boat sales at the different events around town. We have our fence banner renewals and new sales going on still. If you're a business and you've sponsored us in the past, please sponsor us again and get those checks in. We can really use them.
That's great. And the number is 988-7643. And, okay, Jenny, I'll say I'm going to buy a season's ticket. My family and I are going to go check out the ball this
excellent
fall.
I'll hook you up.
All right. Well, thank you for coming. If you need more information, you could just search Thunder Mountain Falcon Football or give Jenny a buzz, 988-7643. Go out on a Whale Watch cruise, raise some funds so Thunder Mountain High School could play some balls.
we are almost sold out on those tickets. So call soon. We're down to about 10 to 20 tickets
left.
Excellent.
Okay.
Doing well.
All right. So there's a lot of deadlines today. All righty. We're going to take a short break. We're going to bring on our next guest.
This is Bird Note. After dark, when most birds sleep, a few break into song, like this whippoorwill. The whippoorwill is a true night bird, feeding and mating and nesting in the dark. But a few songbirds that are active during the day also sing at night. Most renowned is the nightingale of Europe and Asia. In North America, for about a week each spring, the yellow-breasted chat also sings in the darkness. Why would a bird that carries on all its other activities during the day sing after sunset? Yellow-breasted chats migrate at night. A male singing then may attract a mate more readily, because it has the sound stage largely to itself. Most other birds are silent, and the cooler nighttime air carries sound more efficiently than during the day. Chats at night also sing shorter and lower-pitched songs, with longer gaps between songs, a song pattern that carries well over long distance. Once the females have all arrived for the season, the male chats go quiet at night, but not the whippoorwill. Did you know that you can hear Bird Note day or night? Catch it as a podcast at iTunes or on our website, birdnote.org.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:31 p.m. Our next guests are Mac Metcalf. He is a retired National Guard sergeant, and Kirk Thorstenson, who is a part-time National Guardsman. He's a captain and a chaplain and a major.
Yes.
And welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. So there is a party going on. There's a reunion going on the 30th. Is that true?
That's right. We're going to have pig roast. We're going to have steaks. We're going to have drinks. And everyone who's served in the National Guard or is serving is invited in the Alaska National Guard. And we hope to have a real good turnout.
Yeah, there'll be representatives from the community, from the governor's office and the mayor's office and a lot of local businesses who just want to get together and say thank you for everyone's service and share what they have to offer, whether it's in terms of literature or information or some sort of benefit that these families can take advantage of. They just want to get the word out.
That's great. And this is the third annual National Guard reunion or big thank you party?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
In the past, how many people have come?
God, we've had
hundreds.
Yes, about 200 to 300, I think, is a good number. We did it first last year. We did it at the, or 2 years ago, we did it at Sandy Beach. Last year, we did it at the Jack. This year, it's at the A and B Hall, and that's near Foodland. And it starts at 4:30 and will end around 8:30. And again, all current members and retired members and people who just served for 3 years, 6 years in the Alaska National Guard, Army and Air, are invited.
Okay, and that's July 30th.
Yes.
A week from Wednesday.
Right.
Okay.
And what if I could, I'd like to read our sponsors off. These people have given us a lot of money.
Of course.
I mean, a pig roast and the hall, all of the food, that costs money. So there is Gold Belt, Coors Alaska, Alaska Marine Lines, NC Machinery, Alaska Airlines, Alaska Brewery, Juno Hydropower, Sea Alaska, First Bank, and the American Legion, and
VFW, and the Wounded Warrior Project, and Hecla Greens Creek.
Wow, that's a lot of people thinking. That's a lot of people getting together to make that happen. That is great.
Yes, and like I said, it takes money, and these are the people who put up the money, or sometimes they're putting up the food and Right. Doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. I just have a question for either of you. So I know what the National Guard is, but I'm going to ask you, what is the National Guard and what's your service like being part of the National Guard?
Yeah. Why don't you go start off, Mac?
I joined in the late 1980s. I'd been in the Army. I'd been to Vietnam. And so 20 years later, I joined. And I stayed with it until I retired at age 60. And I was deployed with Kirk over to Kuwait, and they were their missions to Iraq. And basically, I think the big thing about this to me, and I think to most people, is unlike the Army, where you go in, come out, and you really never see the guys again that you served with, this, you know, you go with people that you've worked with for years sometimes, or maybe you just joined, and but the thing is, you get to see these people again. And this is kind of the heart of what we're trying to do, is you could see people you served with. And that's why I think it's a kind of a unique thing.
So you're working with the same crew over and over?
Yeah, same crew. And, you know, I grew up, my father was in the National Guard for 30 years. So a lot of the people that I grew up around encouraged me to join, which I did when I was eligible. And I've been in, it'll be 15 years in August, and hopefully many more to come. But just the opportunity to see everybody again and to see how they're doing. And they were a big part of why I joined. And hopefully, you know, with the families present at this event, there'll be another generation of men and women here to join up.
What's the commitment?
Boy, you know, the recruiters would know the most about that, which if anyone's interested, they could find contact information online at the Alaska National Guard website. But usually, at least my enlistment was 6 years part-time with an option for an additional 2.
Yeah. Okay. And you've been in 15.
Yeah.
And you, okay. I think this is the way it goes, though, right?
Hey, you get in so far, then you don't, you know, you're close.
Right.
Don't want to get out.
And Kirk mentioned his father serving. We were classmates. His father and me were classmates in high school here. And so you get a sense of family, you know, families who committed to the Guard. And it's usually, as Kirk pointed out the other day, is the kids of the fathers and now you're getting a lot of daughters. And so that's, I think, kind of neat.
The generational.
Right.
Yeah, there's some stats out there. A lot of the recruits that join are related somewhat to another service member.
Right.
So.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
Number one. Thank you for coming in today. And if you're listening and you have served with the National Guard in the past, present, come on down and get your big thank you on July 30th. The community wants to say thank you. So it's 4:30 to 8 at the A&B Hall.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Everybody loves their pet, and most likely they've got pictures of them. During the month of August, KTOO celebrates pets of all shapes and sizes with a show of photographs. If you've got a photo of your pet, bring it down to KTOO to share with others. It doesn't have to be cute. It doesn't have to be funny. It just needs to showcase your pet. The photos need to be matted or framed, ready to hang, and should be delivered to the station no later than Thursday, July 31st, for a reception featuring the storytelling of Pete Griffin on Friday, August 1st. For more information, please call Jeff Brown at 463-6425 or email jeff@ktoo.org.
Something's cooking at the Jack. Join your friends, family, and neighbors every Friday night, 4 to 7 p.m. for Food Truck Fridays. Live music, food, art, and fun. Food available starting at 4 p.m. with performances starting at 5:30. Food Truck Fridays, where the music is free and the food is worth paying for. Details at jahc.org. This message brought to you by the Jack.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. It's 3:38 p.m. Shona Strausser is here with us, not to host like she does on Thursday, but to be here to talk about the youth program at Perseverance Theater. It's called Star. They've been hard at work, and they've got some shows coming up. So what's on the agenda?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me. We do 3 shows every summer with about 40 to 50 kids, and this program has been going on for about 32 years,
wow.
So a really long time in Juneau, and this summer we've got Into the Woods Junior. They have the junior on there because it's the condensed version, and it's Sondheim, so the music is really hard and really awesome.
They need a junior version.
You know, even the adults could do the junior version. It's really hard music. It's beautiful. And Much Ado About Nothing, the Shakespeare, it's an abridged version, but still has all the beautiful parts of the story. And then this year also an original work called My America, My Story. And this is written by the students themselves with the help from their director, and it's about the students' lives and what they see their dreams are and roles are as Americans.
Oh, wow. That sounds fantastic.
It is awesome. I saw a snippet of it the other day, and I actually wept like a little baby. And it wasn't sad. It was actually more prideful.
Moving.
Yeah.
Moving. It sounds great. So that's quite the variety. I'll tell you, Perseverance is really putting on quite a variety this summer between the Summerfest, which is three wonderful shows at the Jack and in repertoire. They're doing their own little version of Summer Stock, our little Berkshire Theater Fest here in downtown beautiful Juneau. And then 40 to 50 kids in three different shows. So opening weekend is this weekend. Is that correct?
That's right. The shows run in rep. So there's three performances of each show, so three shows, three performances. It runs over two weekends. There's a full show schedule online, so I won't get into the nitty-gritty here, but you can check out perseverancetheater.org to see what that schedule is. You can also give me a call at the theater at 364-2421, and you can actually ask anybody there. The tickets are on sale at Vendini, kind of the usual outlets, Hearthside Books, The Jack, all that kind of good stuff, and available online, too, at perseverancetheater.org.
Right. And so it starts Friday, this Friday, the 25th, at 7:30, and then it runs until Sunday matinee, August 2nd?
The closing show is actually Saturday, August 2nd, or Sunday we reserve for a big old party.
Oh, there you go. So it's the two weekends, and then there's some shows during the week as well.
Exactly. Oh, so okay. We run Friday to Sunday. There's matinees also, and then we run Wednesday to Saturday. So there's midweek shows
right.
Also.
And I think the tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for students.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the past, maybe a friend's child was in it or so on and so forth. I like to see theater, so I just go, and I'm always amazed. You know, you kind of go and say, oh, I'm going to see some children's theater, and I go, wow, this is, like, excellent children's theater. So,
you know,
impressive.
The big thing that we try to push forward in our productions with the kids is fun, of course, but also professionalism, and that's something that I think is never really too early to understand or practice. And the kids rise to the occasion. So it's kind of one of those things, if you set the bar high, they go for it.
Right. Okay. So if you want to find out all the nit-grit, you could check out Perseverance Theater's website. It's pretty comprehensive. Thanks, Shona, for coming. And I'll be there this weekend.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back to Juneau Afternoon, Alaska's capital city's very own live radio show. It's 3:45 p.m., and our next guest is Jim Pinar. He is a CBJ employee, and he is here to talk trash, specifically commercial, household, hazardous waste, and other hazardous waste. So, Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me in.
Yeah. So, let's start at the very beginning. What are the different programs as far as getting rid of hazardous waste?
The hazardous waste program is for residential, and that's Fridays and Saturdays now. Every Friday and Saturday every week.
Okay.
That's been a big change. And then Mondays, which I just sent out the PSA on, was for a change for SQGs. And SQGs is a small quantity generator. According to EPA, if you generate less than 220 pounds of hazardous waste per month, you're a small quantity generator, and that can go through my program.
Okay.
And we're changing that day.
All right. Let's go to the residential program. So where can people let's just start at the very baseline here. So
sure.
Where do people drop off their waste?
At the hazardous waste facility, most residents know the location. It's 5436 Commercial Boulevard. It's right off of Anka on your way to Costco and Home Depot.
Okay.
On the right hand side.
And what is hazardous waste?
Let's get this right.
Okay.
Household hazardous waste is any retail product that has been purchased from a store that has a label on it that says dangerous, hazardous, a certain way to dispose of it. Once that retail product's been bought, used, and then done with, as far as the consumer is concerned, that is now considered a household hazardous waste.
And that is their responsibility to get rid of it in the proper way.
It's nice when they do. That's why we have the local program. The federal government doesn't have it set up quite that way that it is the resident's responsibility. But household waste is exempt from any federal or state law. So they leave it down to the cities, municipal government entities to set programs up and educate people to bring it in.
Okay. So I understand the labeling of it, but
sure.
Can you give us a short list of the most popular hazardous waste that people have?
Paint and oil.
Okay.
Easy. The two biggest items we get is used motor oil, spent motor oil, and paint. That's the two. But it goes on to cleaners, lacquers, thinners, pesticides, garden stuff. It just goes on and on.
Oh, batteries?
Batteries. Car batteries, AAA alkaline batteries, NiCad batteries, yes.
Okay. All right. And then you have this SQG.
The small quantity generator, and the program for most residents have been here for quite a while. The household hazardous waste was basically a program run by CBJ that had 7 events a year, about one a month during the summer months. Very successful program, and there was lots of lines. Every time we had an event on a month, the lines were horrendous. The lines are gone. There is no more lines. I've been told you pull in there, you drop it off, you might have 2 vehicles in front of you.
Every Friday and Saturday.
Every Friday, Saturday has made a world of difference.
Okay.
Because it was on Sundays, because out in Lemon Creek, it's a business area, and Sundays was the preferred day to, stop traffic, have lines. So because the contractor was in town, Monday was the normal collection day for SQGs.
Okay.
And now that we've been open, we've opened this up on this new program since April 11th. And certain things are starting to pop out on how we can operate better and tweak it and, kind of manicure it. And it's come to where the facility now is open Friday and Saturday, and it just makes sense to have it open on Thursdays for the SQGs for operational purposes.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. All right. So there's those two programs. Are there any other programs that you oversee?
Sure. There's the has-been program.
What's that?
Has-been. It's has-been waste, and it's exchangeable. It's still usable. It's still in good state. It's still in the same container that it was manufactured to be in the container. And I have 3 carts out there. This has been a very, very successful program. We don't do all our paint because we just don't have the area yet for it, but we are going to have 5 gallons of paint available if somebody wants to paint a fence or a doghouse or what have you. But certain material come in, and if it's 60% full in the same container, sometimes we get containers and gallons of paint that aren't even opened. And so we set them on these shelves, and the citizens can come in as they drop stuff off and go in and look on the shelves, and if there's something there that they could utilize that it was manufactured for, they sign off on it and weigh it and take it. Last month, we exchanged back out into the community over 1,600 pounds of usable.
Wow, that's items. Great.
Free. It's free.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's a great program.
Oh, and is that new?
It's new. It's new as far as that. Yeah, we couldn't do that on a drop-off event day because all we were there was trying to get the cars collected and get the line keep moving. So this is a new program,
okay.
Including the e-waste. We did, on the previous program, take one TV per residence and one computer monitor because they have lead and mercury in them and considered a hazardous waste. We now take all electronic waste. If it has a plug-in, we take it. Hair dryers, toasters, vacuum cleaners, radios, anything that has a plug-in, we'll take it.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and so this exchange program that you could go and see if there's something like,
sure.
Oh, you
mm-hmm.
know, this is green paint, I'm going to use it because
yeah.
why not? That's during Friday and Saturdays or Thursdays,
yes.
too, whenever
yeah,
you're
no,
open?
They're in opening hours.
Okay.
And a few citizens have caught on to that pretty good. I was there the other day, and a gentleman brought in a small box of stuff, and he took like 50 pounds out, you know. So it's worth stopping and taking a gander at what's on the shelves there.
Okay, and what are the operating hours?
Operating hours are 8 to 4:30.
Okay, Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
Okay, great. And if people have questions, is there a number that they could call
sure,
you?
Sure, they can call me. They can call me. My number is 780-6009. They can also get on juno.org and go to the Public Works and go to the Hazardous Waste section, and we've totally updated. I'm not done with it yet, but it is updated. Talks about the has-been area, talks about times, talks about material, has lists. There's a form on there for the SQGs. They can go in and see what the actual prices are because SQG businesses have to pay for their way. Citizens are charged on a monthly utility bill.
Okay. So, really, so if you have a computer that you need to dispose of, and you could just go and do that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for all you do, and thanks for coming in today.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the offer. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
tonight on 360 North at 8. The topic on Science for Alaska is There Will Be Ice, Outlook on Retreating Sea Ice for Alaska. At 9, we look at wide-ranging impacts of social and economic factors on Americans' health and how we organize health care in Our Nation's Health, a focus on social determinants. Healthy Body, Healthy Mind is at 10, and This is America and the World at 10:30. All tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Thank you for sharing your glorious afternoon with us at Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host, and here is the weather. Tonight it's partly cloudy early in the evening, then becoming mostly cloudy. Scattered showers south of Juneau, patchy fog late, lows around 50. Tomorrow, patchy fog in the morning, then decreasing clouds in the afternoon, remaining mostly cloudy with scattered showers over the coast mountains, highs around 69 degrees. Tomorrow night, increasing clouds, scattered showers, lows around 50. Wednesday, mostly cloudy. Wednesday night, cloudy chance of rain. And Thursday through Friday, rain likely. So we have some good weather, maybe throughout tonight, maybe even throughout tomorrow, it sounds like. Join Ken Fix tomorrow. He's got a great lineup. He's going to learn about Fish 101, learn a little bit more about Tracy Oram. Annie Bartholomew will be here about artist Ricky Tagaban. Sounds like a great show. And, of course, if you miss a Juno afternoon, you could always check it out at your leisure at ktoo.org. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.